to expect to help you go through that difficult transition. Maybe you've been out in the wilderness hunting or fishing and you were relying on a guide to help you find where the animals were or where the fish were. I have an experience on a youth mission trip. I went whitewater rafting. We're not doing that this year. It was really dangerous. But all of us, two did fall out. I was not one of them. Like, you are relying on a guide. You're all in this raft. None of us, we're from Iowa. We've never been through rapids, and our lives are really trusting the guide who's telling us, you need to get over here. You got to go between these two rocks. Here's what you're going to do. Here's how you help somebody back in the boat if they fall out. Like, we were life and death trusting that guide to get us through those rapids. Whatever your situation, think about how much trust you were putting in that person to lead you and guide you through this scary or dangerous time. And now that you're through that situation and you survived, I can ask you to imagine what would happen if you found out in the middle of it that that person was a fraud. What if I found out that my whitewater rafting leader had just bought the stuff over at, you know, Shields the day before, and he'd been hired for 12 bucks an hour because they were short workers, and they said, oh, it's easy, just get in the back of the boat and tell them right and left. We would have been in really, really big trouble, right? If I found out he was just a pretender who didn't know what he was doing, or worse, if he's like, I'm out. I just bugged out, jumped off the boat during a easy part of the water and swam away. We'd be like, what on earth just happened? Like, we were fully trusting him with our lives to go through something we'd never done, never experienced, and didn't know how to get through it. With the wrong person leading you through these challenging situations, they can become absolutely terrifying. And quite frankly, they can even become dangerous. And it's in this feeling of utter dependence on another person that we have to imagine for ourselves today to fully understand Jesus' teaching. You see, today is essentially part two of what we looked at last week when Jesus said, I am the gate. But if you recall in that message, we weren't talking about an inanimate object, you know, an actual gate that swung. But we saw that when Jesus was saying that, he was pointing to the role of a shepherd in protecting and providing for his sheep. We talked about how the shepherd created these temporary paddocks, if you will, that the sheep could go into at night with a small opening. And the shepherd would lay in that opening and it would actually become the gate to keep the sheep in and the danger out. You see, a shepherd is an indispensable guide in the life of a sheep. Without a good shepherd, a sheep is not going to survive very long in the dangerous wilderness of Judea. Like me, a complete novice, trying to ride through the whitewater rapids, trusting this guide who is telling us which side to paddle down, a sheep is completely ill-equipped to navigate life in the wilderness alone. They don't know where the water is. They don't know where the green pasture is. They don't know where the predators are probably hiding. They need a shepherd to guide them through all those things. And like last week, we saw sheep need a shepherd to provide their food, their water. Additionally, the shepherd protects them from the weather, the steep cliffs, and the attacking animals, even the thieves and the robbers. And the reason the shepherd is able to offer the provision and the protection that the sheep require in order to survive is because he knows the sheep and they know him. He knows where the danger is. He knows where to take them and lead them. So they trust him. They follow him and they enter past him as the gate into safety every single night. Today, we continue in John chapter 10. If you want to turn there in your Bibles, we'll get there in a moment, where we're going to be looking at another of the seven I am statements of Jesus in the book of John. In verse 11, what we see is Jesus says, right after saying, I am the gate, he now says, I am the good shepherd. But before we go any further, we have to look at the situation that Jesus is speaking this to the crowd. like Jesus said when he said he was the light of the world, at that time he was actually at a festival that was centered on these giant lights in the temple court. Here, Jesus is making the claim to be a good shepherd at another Jewish festival, what we now call Hanukkah, which was a festival that remembered the bad leadership or the bad shepherds of Israel during the 2nd and 3rd century BC. So here's a little bit of a history lesson. In John 10, in verse 22, what the Bible calls the festival of dedication is what we now call Hanukkah. And even today, Jews celebrate Hanukkah the same way with this reading that we're going to look at. But it's a festival where the Jews remember the Maccabean War between the conservative Jews who are trying to hold on to the faith of their forefathers and the Hellenistic Jews who are melding the thoughts of Greek theology and culture into the festivals of their own day. And so the traditionalists, the conservatives, were like, we can't be doing this. And the festival of dedication was to remember the day in 165 BC when Judas Maccabees recaptured Jerusalem and rededicated it unto the Lord. It's because of its history that Hanukkah then has become a season of asking hard questions about the previous leaders of Israel. Like, where were the shepherds to guide Israel? How did they get into this mess that they ended up with their own little war within themselves? How did the leadership lose its way? In fact, during the festival, a warning to the false shepherds from Ezekiel chapter 34 was read to the people. So here's what the people would have just read before Jesus stands up and says, I am the good shepherd. They likely were in Ezekiel chapter 34 hearing this text read to them, beginning in verse 1. It says, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who took care who only take care of yourselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. You've not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You've not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd when they were scattered. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. Jumping to verse 11. For this is what the sovereign Lord says. I love to hear these words in light of Jesus. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. Verse 15, I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. Is that not a beautiful picture? What we see of Jesus as he tells the story of the 100 sheep and the one that gets lost. We see those words here. But at the time that Ezekiel wrote this, it's this terrible condemnation to the leaders of Israel at this time, saying, you have done a terrible job of leading the people of Israel. You have allowed them to fall into disregard. And so then, every year at the Festival of Dedication, they were reminded, your leadership has led you to a really bad spot. And it was a call to say, make sure that your leaders are keeping you connected with God. Because God says one way or another, he is going to seek after the broken and bind and bring back the strays, bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. I love that passage. But it's also such a rebuke to the failed shepherds of Israel's past. Fortunately, in Jesus' day, the Pharisees were the ones to finally get it right, or so they thought. Remember, in John chapter 9, we talked about last week, Jesus just healed a man who'd been blind his entire life. He gave a man who could not see sight. And what did the Pharisees want to do? They wanted to instantly poo-poo this miracle. and try to say this couldn't have happened. They're especially angry. Jesus did it on the Sabbath. They were acting as a wall, as a barrier, saying, no, 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 no. You can't have access to God and God's healing power. They were in no way connecting the lost sheep with the God who comes to heal. They were getting in the way exactly how the terrible leaders of Israel had done hundreds of years earlier. And with that now as our backdrop, now we can read how this would have landed on their ears as the Pharisees hear Jesus speak this to them. John chapter 10, verse 11. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, I know they hear this and they know he's talking about them. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Do you see the one idea that runs clearly through this entire passage? It's the reason why Jesus calls himself the Good Shepherd, because he is willing to lay down his life for the sheep. He's willing to do what nobody else is willing to do. They're his sheep, and so he's willing to pay whatever price it's going to take. He says the hired hands just run away at the first sign of danger because they don't own the sheep, so they don't care. It's like that no good jerk maybe you went to at the party once and said, oh yeah, I'll be with you. And then they ran off with some other friends and left you there. If you've ever been in that situation, I have. It's weird. You're like, now I'm in a bunch of strangers. Why did you even bring me to this party? It's not a very great feeling. Jesus is saying, yeah, that's what the leaders of Israel have done. As soon as something gets hard, they take off and they just leave you as prey. They're unwilling to stick by your side, and that just proves their lack of care or commitment to you. But Jesus does care because he's the one who owns the sheep. They are his. We are his. And he knows us. And so at this moment, he's foreshadowing his commitment to do absolutely everything for us, including to die on the cross for the forgiveness of our sins. None of the Pharisees can make that claim. The Pharisees were the ones who were laying this incredibly heavy burden on the people and never tried to help them. They appreciated their position of power and authority over the people, but they never used that position to help the people. They became the wall, the barrier between God and the people. They said, let's make this wall really high. Let's make the law even harder to attain. In no way were they making a way for people to connect with God. They were just like the previous shepherds of Israel's past whom God had called out. But Jesus is different. Jesus isn't leading the people so he can achieve some sort of reward or greater attention. In fact, his view of leadership is completely upside down. He's leading by being a servant. Later, we'll read that he washed the disciples' feet. He will lay down his life so that each one of us is able to experience abundant life, better life. Where the Pharisees increase the burden, Jesus removes the burden. He fulfills the law that we could never fulfill. We were never going to get it right. So as the gate, he opened himself wide open and said, enter, come on in to the house that has many rooms, he says in John 14. He makes the way where there was no way. He does what only the good shepherd can. And he leads us to where nobody else can lead us. And no, he was in no way a victim of God's cosmic plan. Some people think that Jesus' death on the cross proves some weird form of divine child abuse. But Jesus is so clear here. He says, nobody takes my life, but I lay it down of my own accord. When Jesus died on the cross, he knew what he was doing, and he had the choice to say, I don't want to. But he chose to give everything so that we could be with him forever. His willingness to give up everything for those who put their trust in him proves his devotion to us. It proves that we are of immense value to him. If he didn't care about you, he wouldn't have done that. Bad leaders who don't care about those they lead, they're going to run away to protect their own skin. But Jesus sheds his blood so that we don't have to. He is the good shepherd. Now, after digging into this passage, I want to unpack three lessons from the good shepherd. First, we need to be discerning. The biggest problem facing most people today, whether they're Christians or not, is that they don't see life through a spiritual lens. So they don't understand the adventure that they're trying to navigate, or even understand that there is this challenge in front of them and there's a guide who's saying, I'm here and I want to lead you and I'm going to help you through the hard things. Through experience, we all recognize this world is hard. It's dangerous. It has some really dark corners that we've all experienced. And it's much worse or much more dangerous than any whitewater rapids. And so while we try to navigate this world as best as we can, we would have a whole lot happier life if we recognize there's a guide and there's a guidebook that's going to help, that knows what the troubles of life are and try to point out, don't step there. That's going to get you into trouble. Don't go follow this. That's going to lead you to a path that you don't want to go down. There's all sorts of information that God is trying to give us if we're willing to listen. But we have to be listening to the right thing. That's what discernment is all about. This world has a million things trying to grab your attention, trying to influence you. We got it back. Praise God. TikTok's back. It was only down for 12 hours. I needed that to guide my life. I needed these influencers to help me how to be skinny and a leader and a great dad and a great this and a great that. And you know why these influencers do it? Because they care about you so much. No, because more clicks equal more revenue and a bigger check in their pocket. The same is true of a lot of Bible preachers on TV. There are a ton of them on TV right now. And some of them are really good and they teach the word of God straightforward in a really helpful way. And some of them are just so close to meeting their fundraising goal. And if you can give just $25 or $100 so that they can have a second plane. Like, we've got to be discerning and understand, what is the motivation behind this person who is offering you guidance? If the motivation is truly for you, and there are many who have ministries that are to lead people and help people, and there are people, I think, on social media who love Jesus and want people to experience the life that Jesus has, but there are a lot of people who want money, right? You have to be discerning. Because we're all following different things. We're following different news networks. We're following different social media, different podcasters, different TikTok influencers, whatever it may be. And they're all telling us a different way to live this life. Some of them line up with God's way. Many of them don't. You need to evaluate, who am I listening to? And is it good advice? Am I listening to my good shepherd? Now, there are other people that we can follow. So for the Bible talks about pastors being shepherds. It doesn't mean I am a shepherd of this church, okay? I hope that you're willing to listen and follow the teaching that I bring, but also I'm human. So my teaching can be flawed. And so you also have to evaluate any teacher, me or anybody else here watching online. Is this person, does what they're saying line up with what the good shepherd has said? If they're in alignment, let's go, let's run together. Take the advice and let's follow it as a guide. I hope that you understand my reasoning for being a pastor is not the paycheck. God bless you. Thank you for your donations. There's an offering plate in the back. Like, that's how a church runs. But you guys understand, I'm not doing this job to get rich. I didn't give up being an engineer because I'm like, you know what, or the real money is taking donations from church people. Like, I'm doing this because God called me to it. God had a plan for me. I'm following where he led me. And now I'm trying to lead you to help us make a difference in this community for all sorts of people who need to hear about Jesus. Okay? That's what we're trying to do together. But we have got to be discerning. Second, be a servant. When you think about how I lead this church, I take my model from Jesus, who showed me that leaders don't just sit at the top and wait for people to serve them. I'm not like, hey, I need you to, I don't snap my fingers at you. Hopefully you've never heard me. Hey, over here, I need you to do this. Over there, I need you to do that. I did it at Michelle once, broke those fingers, never again. No, Jesus demonstrates for us a different way of leadership. It's now been coined servant leadership. There's books about it. But what it says is if you want to lead, you get in, you roll your sleeves up with the people, and you show them, this is where we're going, and you do it together. That's how leaders lead. Jesus literally took off his cloak, put the towel around his lap, got on his knees, and washed their dirty feet. He demonstrated, this is a different way. You don't just tell people what to do. You show them how to do it. You get alongside them. You serve them. This is not just advice for me as a pastor or ministry leader. This simply is good advice for leadership at any level. If you want to be a parent who has influence in your child's life, don't just say, don't do this, do this, stop doing that, that's wrong, do more of this. You come alongside, you understand their world a little bit, you serve them, you help them, you say, this is hard, how can I help you with this? And what you're doing when you do that when they're little is you're gaining their respect and you're gaining their trust. So when they're older, you can say, hey, I wouldn't go down that path. And they're more likely to listen to you because they know that you have their best at heart and you're not just some authoritarian telling them what to do, but they're like, no, I think they want what's best for me. That's what good parenting looks like. You can be a better boss if you try to serve your employees by removing the roadblocks rather than just scolding them when they do it wrong, but trying to come in alongside and help them do the job better and then watch as they blossom and grow. You can be a better leader in any organization, including whatever job you happen to do here at this church, if you're always looking for ways to be helpful to those you're leading rather than just telling them what to do. If everybody takes this role of I serve you to help lead you, the world's a better place. And people feel seen and guided and led. Third lesson from the shepherd is be aware. The final important message we have to pull out of this passage, it comes towards the back end where Jesus speaks about his other sheep in other sheep pens. When we see those verses, we have to understand what Jesus is doing is he's preparing them for the not too distant future when the Jews are going to have their belief and their relationship with God opened up to the Gentiles, to the non-Jews, to the Greeks, to us. Let's be honest, almost all of us in this room are Gentiles. And that's what Jesus was talking about here when he was saying, I have other sheep in other pens. It's going to be the Gentiles are going to come in, Jews, and we're all going to be one church together. But I think we can take this a little bit further because when we look around here, most of us look like good church-going folks, right? Like we know what a good church-going folk looks like. And then when somebody comes in and they don't look like they belong at the church, some people have a tendency to be like, well, what are you doing here? And what we need to be like is to say, oh, Jesus told me to be aware. He's got sheep in other pens. Maybe you're one of them. Like, we should have eyes that are open, that are seeking the lost and excited when the lost come in, and see it not as a, what are you doing here? You don't belong, but a, you don't look like us, and this is amazing. God's reaching into that corner of this community too. You know, I've been in a church where a guy showed up drunk, and it, some people were like, what's he doing? We need to escort him out. And the pastor and I were like, let's go pray with him after the service, because he's here for a reason. Right? We've got to have this expectation not to be walls like the Pharisees, but to be gates like Jesus that says, come on in. The Father wants to meet with you. He's got a great abundant life for you. Come join us. So we have to be aware of that. We have to be constantly thinking to ourselves, who else in our own lives? Who else is far from Jesus and right now their life is a mess? And guess what? They need a guide more than anybody. If you know somebody who needs a guide because their life is a mess, they need Jesus. That's what they need. And so you come alongside and you talk to them about their struggles and you say, you know what? I know a guide who's really helpful. And what's interesting is we don't know who the sheep in the other pens are. God does. And sometimes people who might completely surprise you will be totally open to hearing about the gospel of Jesus because they're desperate and they need a leader to guide them through this life. So going back to that uncomfortable situation where I asked you to imagine when we began, this, you know, that situation where you had a guide you were relying on, you didn't know how to get through it yourself. That situation in life is really just a microcosm of your entire life. My Whitewater Rapids adventure is just life. I don't have as much control as I think. I have a river pushing me ahead and just a tiny little oar to try to steer. And I know that I have rapids up ahead. Like, that's what life is. I've got a little bit of, you know, control of myself, but I don't know what lies ahead other than it's going to be hard. And I hope that I get through it. And so the question then for all of us is, do you have a guide that you can trust is going to get you through the rapids? Or are you doing this on your own? Are you like, yeah, I come to church and I hear about this God, but I'm just kind of winging it. Well, how's that going for you? There's a God who cares. There's a God who leads. There's a God who we have to learn and tune our ears to discern and hear his voice and then follow where he leads us ahead. We live in a world of risk and danger and countless moments that we are going to stumble into unnecessary pain and brokenness if we aren't willing to follow the leadership of somebody who's gone before us and knows how to get through it. In Israel's past, they had leaders who didn't actually care for the people, and as a result, they were scattered all over the Middle East by powerful kings. In Jesus' day, there were the religious elite, the Pharisees, who were blind to their own lack of leadership. They had a desire to rule the people from the top, to increase their burden, and to lead the people toward empty religion rather than relationship with God. But Jesus is telling us to stop following poor leaders. It's time for you to really evaluate, who are you following? Who are you trusting to guide you? Is it Jesus, the Good Shepherd, or is it something else that is actually influencing your life and your decisions in a way that's contrary to what Jesus wants for you? Anything other than Jesus and those pointing you toward Jesus are phonies and people just trying to make a buck on your trust. It's time for you to see their influence for what it is and to put your full trust in the one who gave you everything to save you from the consequences of your sin. I encourage you this week, take a moment and evaluate, what is influencing me? Am I being led only by the Good Shepherd and those who are pointing me towards where the Good Shepherd leads? Or am I being led and influenced by a whole bunch of things that really aren't helpful? And then you got to say, I'm done with those things. I'm going to follow the one that I truly can trust. Jesus is the one true guide who can provide for you, protect you, and who actually knows you and what's best for you. If you hear the shepherd's voice calling you today to follow, I ask you to take that step. Follow Jesus, the good shepherd. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?